Dotted around New Zealand are brownish, crimson carved wharenui, or meeting houses, where Māori have gathered for generations. Sometimes you can even see them from the road. And now we're all being invited to peek inside the wharenui, invited by Kerry Opai. He's a Māori linguist and author whose work follows this philosophy: if you show respect for the language, you are showing respect for the culture. And if you show respect for the language and the culture, you're showing respect for the people. His book is a guide into the spirit and what it means to be Māori in the 21st century for all New Zealanders. The book's called Tikanga, An Introduction to Te Ao Māori. And Kerry Opai joins me now. Tēnā koe e te rangatira.
Tēnā koe, Jesse. Ngā mihi ki a koe o te rākoutu i te kāinga. Ngā mihi ki a rōtoto.
To understand Māori, tikanga Māori, do we first need to understand that there is no one idea of what Māori or Māoridom is?
Well, I think in the book I've really tried to push the idea that, yes, we're not a sort of homogenous grouping, that, you know, we have really some quite different, peculiar tikanga to each iwi. There are obviously commonalities and values that we share, but that was certainly one of the drives that I wanted to get across, that actually if you go to different places, you will observe different tikanga. Because I think it's quite easy to sort of say, oh, you know, the Māori people, they do this, but actually there's some quite big differences there.
Differs from iwi to iwi, and possibly even differs from hapu to hapu.
Yeah, absolutely. Even whānau to whānau, there are some places that have, you know, so many marae that they've developed their own set of tikanga for that particular marae, and it's different sort of down the road, you know. So, exploring all of that, but really just an introduction to Māori worldviews and philosophies. And I really wanted to concentrate on the whys. So, if you sort of look at books, there are plenty of academic sort of texts and even manuscripts and all that sort of thing that talk about when, how, what, often, but very few that really delve into why. And I thought it's sort of a timely sort of subject. Let's talk about the whys and wherefores. So, for instance, in some of my work with the WISE group that I was with for 6 years, national NGO, the big question was sort of, why are Māori people in these sort of situations that we're in? And so I needed to get across the impacts of colonization and the differences, and it's not the same for all of us and all those sort of things. So I've really wanted to talk about the whys. If Pepeha is a thing, an introduction sort of piece that Pākehā people want to do, Māori people want to do, immigrants want to do, Pasifika people want to do, should they be the same? If they should, why? If they shouldn't, why? You know, those sort of things. So I've really concentrated on the whys in the book.
Can you tell us about some of your early memories of peeking inside the meeting house?
That's an apt sort of metaphor, because actually that's very much how it was. So I was very lucky. I was taught and trained and instructed by our kaumātua here in Taranaki. I'm from Te Ate Awa, Ngāti Rānui. Ngāti Te Ata and Ngāti Porou, but I was brought up here in Taranaki and brought up and taught by my kaumātua, by my elders here. So I was one of those very curious young people. When everyone else was asleep at 5 o'clock in the morning, I was up listening to the kōrero, listening to what they were talking about. Just very lucky to have good ears, good memory. Yeah, got the privilege of being instructed in those sort of things. So I've always found it's a fascinating world. The Māori world, as I say in the book, the Māori world is in fact a Māori universe. It's so complex and beautiful and wonderful and amazing, like any other culture. So I wanted to, you know, sort of explain a little bit about that.
You write in the book that a kuia once told you, Te Reo Māori is an ancient language and it only had a place in ceremonies on the marae. What's your response or your perspective on that?
Yeah, Well, of course, it certainly does. And, you know, I've done my best to uphold the mana of the language in those settings as well. But I said to her, well, Ekwi, I have to disagree with you, and I'll prove it to you. And so I actually went about creating the first rap in Māori. I won't give you a demo, but just to say it, before D Word and Upper Hutt Posse and all those sort of guys, I was doing a rap in Māori just to prove it could be done, and that the Māori language is as malleable and flexible and, you know, wonderful as any other language. So, you know, with all due respect to our kuia and our kaumātua and the kuia that told me that, I just had to sort of prove that it's actually a fantastic language that is adaptable to any situation. I remember once I taught with my kaumātua our very basic understanding of the principles of Einstein's theory of relativity in mind.
I love that. There's a real momentum around things Māori at the moment. I reckon people love the haka. Yeah. People are learning how to do their own pepeha. More people are scrambling to learn the language. Can you tell me about the significance and the importance of the why behind some of those Māori traditions? Why it's important to, I guess, understand some of the traditions and the context around something like the haka?
It really defines a people. And although, you know, many people can sort of think mistakenly that they don't have much of a culture, everybody does. Every people has a culture. It's just that with things like, say, Pacific people and Māori people, we come from the Pacific, of course, you know, it's clear, it's obvious. You have haka, you have waiata, you have poi, you have those things that are obvious and seen. But actually, we all have deeper values and philosophies that we live by. And yeah, that's sort of what I wanted to talk about a bit more in the book. Just a peek into the wharenui, as I put there, just to start the sort of ball rolling, the conversation going, because, you know, everyone's interested at the moment. It wasn't that long ago that it wasn't something that was really talked about at the dinner table. But right now, there's a groundswell. There's a push amongst the nation, really, to feel out what it means to be from Aotearoa in this day and age and into the future. And, you know, pretty much a lot of our uniqueness is down to Te Ao Māori, Māori language, culture, and worldviews. So it's a good time for it, I think, and I'm sure lots of people, you know, will be happy to explore some of the things I've talked about in the book.
Yeah, your kaumātua used to tell you, he mana tō te kupu, words have great power. Mm. So let's maybe start with words and why is language important? Pronunciation of language and language, what does it signify, symbolize? What do you get when you get the language right?
Yeah. Well, you know, as I've sort of said many times, and you know, many other people have, of course, I believe that certainly in this day and age, you shouldn't be hearing Māori language mispronounced, misspoken on the radio, on TV, all that sort of thing, but also just in ordinary everyday life. As you sort of stated in your opening piece, I believe that it's something that everyone can choose to respect. If you can work on your pronunciation for any language, but especially Māori language, the indigenous language of this country, if you can choose to pronounce it well, pronounce it properly, you are showing respect for it. And implied in that is a respect for tikanga, for the culture, for the thinking, for the worldviews, and therefore an acknowledgement of the mana of the people. So, you know, I think people are ripping off Te Wānau Aotearoa and Te Wānau Rauko and places to learn to speak Māori, to pronounce Māori properly. It's great. That's the sort of thing that I want to really encourage. Because you know, that little insight, that little window into the wharenui, you might not be able to sit there for the 6 hours that the old people are talking and you're listening and getting everything. But if you can peek in, at least with your pronunciation, that you're giving respect straight away, getting respect straight away, and who knows, it might lead on to other things. You know, a language is incredibly important for a people. If you don't have the language of your ancestors, if you can't speak in the language of your ancestors, it's really quite devastating for a lot of people. And being a teacher of te reo for many years, you know, I've encountered probably thousands of people really over the years that were Māori and couldn't speak their language and always felt a deficit, always felt that there was something missing in their lives. And in fact, of course, as you know yourself, Jesse, there's plenty of people on TV and in the media that have gone on that journey themselves and have, you know, through the gaining acquisition of their language, they've been so much more comfortable in their own skin. They know who they are. You know, I would say that, you know, anybody deserves to be able to speak their own indigenous native language. It's part of their identity. It's really hard to talk about your own world views in a language that isn't necessarily your own.
The book is called Tikanga, An Introduction to Te Ao Māori ko Kiri Opai Tēnei He Tino Hōia Ki Taku Hōtaka. I'm talking to Kiri Opai. And you write, Kiri, that it's a lot easier to avoid faux pas or offending Māori if you have an appreciation of the ways yeah. and world views of Māori people and culture. What are some of the fundamentals you'd like people to understand?
Yeah, I think probably, I mean, I've talked about a few of them there, but probably one of the main ones is the whole tapu and noa idea. I mean, that's still very, very prominent in the Māori world. So, you know, I couldn't help but feel a little bit sorry for colleagues and people that didn't know quite straightforward things like don't take your shoes into the lare and don't lean on a table or sit on a table and all those sort of things. So I wanted to explain, you know, those sort of things that, so hopefully people can avoid those faux pas and, you know, avoid those common mistakes. But also I wanted to explain why. You know, it's easier to remember when you have a knowledge and acceptance of, you know, why those things are from Māori worldviews. It's hard to remember basically if you have a fairly monocultural look at the world. So I wanted to sort of give those sort of ideas across and just in a basic way that people can relate to. So hopefully, yeah, people can avoid some of those, you know, can be embarrassing moments.
Yeah, so tapu is, roughly translated, sacred, and noa is safe, sweet, and you can convert one thing into the yeah. other. With, for example, a pōwhiri. So more than just a hello, more than just a welcome, you're actually creating a noa space from something that might have been tapu. Do I have that right?
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I've gone through, you know, a basic example of pōwhiri, and that's, but again, it's not just the what and how and when, it's the why. So exactly that. You have two groups coming together. It's not clear what the reasoning for getting together is. It's come from a time of, in the past, it could be conflict, could be issues that you want to discuss, want to bring up, who knows? So you work those things out through the different parts of the process and eventually end up having a cup of tea, but you certainly don't walk onto the marae and go straight to the wharekai. So there's a reasoning for that, and hopefully I've explained it in a relatively straightforward sort of way. Yeah, the transition from tapu, anything that's sacred, prohibited, even just sometimes special and unique, to a place of noa, of being more commonplace and just free for everyone.
People sometimes ask you what the difference is between a pōwhiri and a whakatau. Both are welcomes or introductions yep. of sorts. What's the distinction there?
Yeah, and again, I wanted to explain some of those sort of things because, you're right, people get them sort of mixed up all the time. And basically, it's that pōwhiri is the sort of full-on, highly tapu. You've got all the different sections, karanga, whaikōrero, probably traditional Waiata, all those sort of things. Whereas Ukatau have sort of been generated more out of a time to get together on and under not such formal circumstances. So they're generally shorter. There may be some of those elements missing. They might not have a karang. The waiata may not be a traditional one, because, you know, basically a lot of these sort of things are happening in the workplace these days. So you may not have access to ko matua, but you still want to be a welcoming organization, let's say. So, you know, all those sort of things, as well as mihi and, you know, different parts of it. Just from my experience in the workforce, when people are sort of trying to engage with Māori processes, and not always sure how to do it. So you're really handy to sort of know some of those differences.
Can you tell us about the concept of atua and why understanding atua is important to understanding tikanga Māori?
So atua, again, and I have to, you know, do my disclaimer here. These are my elders that taught me from Taranaki. So it's always from my perspective, from our perspective here in Taranaki. So there, it may be different in other areas, and it is different in some other areas. But from our perspective, atua are the elements. So on one hand, we are related to them. They're related to us. We are part and parcel of the environment. But I wanted to get across that it's not Tane, a beautiful man with abs standing at the side of the forest with his taiaha or something, and or tangaroa with his you know, King Neptune trident or something like that. Yeah, you know, that sometimes people have those ideas that it's the Greek gods type concept, but they are what you can see, feel, hear, touch. So, you know, last night I just spent a little bit of time just listening to the rain and connecting with the atua tāwhiri mātea. As my co-mātea used to say, some people hear what the rain has to say and some people just get wet. So I'd like to think I spent some good time connecting with our atua, with our elements there.
Is death one of the areas where the world can learn from Māori?
There are probably a few areas, I'd hope, that people can learn from Indigenous peoples, but I think death is probably one of them. And I've, you know, dedicated a section to that in the book, because it's so important in Māori worldviews, because sort of death and life have great mana. Certainly from what I've seen in sort of the non-Māori world, it doesn't seem to have that sort of importance to it. But in a Māori sense, it is really important. So it's highly tapu. It's one of those few sort of events that bring people together from all over the country and sometimes the world, and a time to share and grieve together. And so there are many akatoki, many traditional proverbs that say, really, the only way to heal from the arduousness of death and, you know, just anguish is to be together and support each other and let the tears flow. You know, those are the sort of things I wanted to get across, that the old people in traditional times did talk about mental health. They did talk about emotional well-being. They literally have wakatauki proverbs that say you have to let the emotions out. You know, it's not stiff upper lip, boys. You know, it's not get hard. It was actually, when it's time to cry, you cry with all your energy. And when it's time to laugh, you do the same thing, and you do that together. So I think there are some lessons to learn there for everyone.
One of the questions you're most often asked is, how do I avoid causing offence to Māori? Is that something you can answer?
Yes. Just read the book. basically, I sort of went, you know, it's a big, long, complicated answer. So I really had that in the back of my mind when I was writing it. You know, honestly, you know, without too much on the sort of jokey side of things, it's if you do read the book, there's some really good tips and hints there that will help people avoid some of those, you know, offense-giving situations, because it's really born out of ignorance. You just don't know. So there's some nice, clear, easy hints and tips that will hopefully allow people to navigate their way around those sort of things.
Yeah, I didn't know you weren't meant to wash the tea towels with the rest of your clothes.
Yeah, it's a classic because, you know, I'd have a class and I'd say, right, who washes their tea towels and their towels together, their clothes towels, you know, their body towels sort of things. And, you know, many hands would go up. And so I'd have to say, well, actually, in a Māori sense, that's not actually right. You may not even know why that is. It might just be mum said or nana said or something like that. But again, it's the mixing of tapu and noa. Those things don't really go together. There's a clash. So you'll find in many families, many Māori families, even if they don't particularly know sort of why, they'll do things like not wash their tea towels and their other towels together, or just things like, you don't see much these days, you know, smoking's not exactly high on the priority list, but people that smoke, Māori people that smoke, if they see a hearse go past, they'll often put their cigarettes out. If you ask them why, and they're not usually sure why, it was just something taught to them, or it didn't feel right, or those sort of things. And that's about tapu e noa, the body going past is a mate, it's tapu. And so they'll often put their cigarettes out and not even know why.
Tauke, Kerry, thanks for the kōrero rero, and well done on the book. People can read some more, plenty more in there. It's called Tikanga, An Introduction to Te Ao Māori. And thanks very much for your time today.
Cheers, Jesse. Thanks, mate. Kia ora tātou.